Hello, welcome to Between the Covers. I'm your host, Bethany Grabo. Today's guest is Kate Ristaw. Kate is a self-described folklorist and author. Her new book, Asterion's Curse, came out in October 2016 and is the first of the Clockbreakers series. Kate Ristaw, welcome to Between the Covers.
Thank you for having me.
Today we're talking about your newest book, Clockbreakers, Asterion's Curse, that has been called a time travel book, a heart travel book, a book about friendship, forgiveness, courage, and the powers waiting to be discovered in each one of us. Could you give us a summary of the book?
I love that review. It's from Kathleen Lane. And when she wrote it, it perfectly described how I think about the book in terms of its time travel book. And we have an 11-year-old girl named Charlie, and she gets a key to go back in time. And so she travels back into ancient Greece in the first book. And then in other subsequent books, she'll travel to other places, which I know and we might get to later in the interview today.
Great. Well, the main character, Charlie, and her friends, Trent and Maria, travel to another world, as you said, where they encounter, among other things, characters from Greek mythology. So why ancient Greece as a setting?
Oh, that's such a good question. But I think mainly ancient Greece was where I started when I started to read about mythology. My mom actually read me Greek stories when I was a little kid. So we read about the Minotaur and we read about, Perseus, and we watched the movies for different Greek mythology things. So mainly it was just Greek mythology is just in my blood. It's something that I've thought about for a long time. I've also studied Greek mythology. My background is a folklorist. I went to University of Oregon, and so I have my master's in folklore, and I studied religion, and I studied English, and studied creative writing all together, and then really thought about how I could use mythology in different ways.
Well, I think some other authors, Rick Riordan, to name one, has really brought up an interest in that in kids, and it's really exciting. I work at a public library, and a lot of kids will read those books about those things and then want more things about, Greek mythology or whatever it might be. So that's really exciting when you can get kids interested in something and then they want to do more research because they have a personal interest now. So I think that's really cool.
And it's been fantastic, actually, working with kids and talking to them about Rick's series, the Percy Jackson series, because kids will, look at the front cover of Clockbreakers, and it has a picture of Asterion, who's the Minotaur, and he's holding a giant mallet, and they're like, he should have an axe. He always has an axe in, the Percy Jackson series. And so then we get to talk about, where Rick got his information from and what Greek mythology might have actually looked like if it had really happened at that time, what would Asterion have been carrying? So,
well, in addition to mythological characters, we have automatons. So why add those to the mix?
Automatons kind of gives it a steampunk flair, I would say. I always thought about Greek mythology, and Greek mythology tends to focus a lot on monsters and heroes. And so one of the things I thought about was how can we bring some of a little bit of elements of technology into it? So on Charlie's side, they're thinking about Wi-Fi and cell phones. But then they see these automatons, which would have totally been possible just in terms of using gears and using steam and, trying all these different robotic elements.
Because automatons are cool.
Yeah.
If we're going to have, robots, we should have robots.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as you mentioned, the main character, Charlie, is an 11-year-old girl. And she's great at math. She wishes her parents would stop treating her like a baby, and she uses a wheelchair. How did you come up with Charlie's character?
So Charlie is a character that I was thinking about for quite a while. She came out of a couple of neighbors that I have, actually. So I have one neighbor who is the swimmer, and she's an amazing swimmer, but she had scoliosis. And so she knew she was going to be having to have surgery, and she wouldn't actually be able to swim like she wanted to. So it got me thinking in terms of if you have someone who so much of their personality and their life is put into something and they can't do it, what would their life really look like? And then I also had a neighbor who she was 4 years old and she's in a wheelchair. And I thought a lot about the books that she was going to read and what would she read and really what stories are there out there for her. So those are two of my inspirations for Charlie as a character. And then I just thought, okay, if I give her a key to go back in time, where does she go?
Charlie's dealing with the disintegration of her friendship with another major character in the book, Trent. And they used to be close, but Trent changed into a kind of a different person after his parents' divorce. And first he was angry and acting out, and then he was charming with adults and delivering cruel comments with a smile to Charlie and her classmates. By the end of the book, I'm still trying to figure out Trent. So will we see him more in the next book in the series?
Definitely. Trent's storyline is one that we start to get into, but we don't fully understand his character in the first book. And Trent is actually probably the character that's most like me when I was in fourth grade. So my parents were going through a divorce, and I was trying to understand kind of what was happening and my friendships and what my family was like. And so there's a lot of issues of anger, but also issues of, like, who do I trust and who do I want to trust and who are my friends? And do I really want people? One of his things is he doesn't like how people are constantly asking, like, how he's doing. And we see that reflected back with Charlie, where Charlie also says, you know, people are always asking me if I'm okay, and I'm sick of that question. So those are some things that were particularly resonant with my experience, where as I was growing up and going through a divorce, like, constantly being asked, like, are you okay? Like, talk about your emotions. I was like, I don't want to talk about my emotions. Like, can't we read books and, like, do fun stuff?
Okay, well, that kind of changes my next question. So Maria, another major character, Charlie's best friend, she's great. She's fierce. She's not afraid to speak her mind. So did you have a Maria in your life growing up?
I think Maria in my head is also someone that I just kind of wish that I could be. Somebody who just, like, she's totally awesome. And she's, you know, she helps all of her friends so much. But at the same time, like, things just kind of roll off her. So if there's something bad that's happening, like, she'll be mad about it for a second. And then she's like, let's go have some donuts. So that's the kind of character that I connect with as someone who I would like to be, just in terms of, like, her personality and her fierceness and how she, like, approaches everything.
I think that would be great, too.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
Like, she doesn't start crying when she gets mad.
Yeah. She just goes power. And fixes it.
And it has an amazing cover. Did you have anything to do with the cover? I was really surprised. A few years ago, I went to this workshop, and they were talking about how a lot of times the author doesn't know who the illustrator is, has no say in the pictures, and I was just like, what? So I really love this cover.
I love this cover too. So I actually got lucky where, as part of my contract with Indigo Sea Press, I asked them if I could bring along my own illustrator for the front cover. And so this is actually a local illustrator, and he's a sci-fi cover artist. His name is Lee Moyer, and you can look at him. He's leemoyer.com. And so we actually, the main character, Charlie, is one of my friend's daughters. Mm-hmm. And so we knew her, so we did a photo shoot with her. And then he drew, obviously, Asterion in the background. And it was really great to see the process and how the cover developed, because it's hard. It's hard to think about, like, how do we represent a character in a wheelchair in a way where she still has a lot of her own agency and where she looks like she's doing something? And so there was a lot of revision, and it was cool to see that and to talk about, like, kind of my vision of it and his vision of it and how they work together. So I had way more participation in the process than I think most authors get to.
Well, I want to talk about diversity. Charlie uses a wheelchair. Her best friend Maria is a Spanish-speaking firecracker with two moms, and there's even a bit of talk about rich versus poor. Mm-hmm. Diversity in books is a hot topic. It has its own hashtag even, so hashtag we need diverse books. Why do you think diversity in books, particularly children's books, is important?
I think the number one thing is that when kids open books and when they read books, they should be able to see their own experience in books and see other people's experience in books. So in terms of the we need diverse books, if you look at that hashtag, they talk a lot about, like, books as a mirror and as a window. So something that kids can see themselves reflected back, and also that they can see other people and other people's experiences. And, you know, as a mom, I have a 5-year-old son. And a lot of the way I've written over the last 5 years has really changed as I've thought about, what do I want him to read and what books are going to change his experience and help him grow into the person that I want him to be. And I want him to be really empathetic and understanding and be able to see what other people see. And so in terms of the We Need Diverse Books movement, like, I can't tell you how just excited I am that actually is a hashtag that, like, people know and are excited about. Because when I originally started to go through the agent process with Clockbreakers, it was about 3 years ago, and I had an agent, and she brought it around to all the big publishing houses. And we did some revise and resubmits, and which means that we send something out, and then we do some revisions, and we send it back. But we were getting all these comments that were basically saying things like, does she have to be in a wheelchair? Like, can we have a character who is just a regular kid. And there's part of me that like was so angry because I want, like I was saying, I want everyone to be able to see themselves in books, and to just take someone out of that completely and not even have them be a part of the conversation or have them be part of literature is insane to me. Like, it was absolutely insane. So I just kept working. Like, I kept pushing to get the book out. And this book is through a small press called Indigo Sea Press, which really just supported my vision and, like, my ideas and my understanding of, like, what books can be.
I really like what you said about books being a mirror and a window. I think that's really great. And there was an article a while back about how reading fiction builds empathy in kids because they will, you know, see something from a character's perspective that they've never experienced personally, and maybe they never will, but at least they can imagine what it would be like because they're like, oh. And I know in my case, that's certainly true. I've read books about, like, someone that was paralyzed in an accident and how he got really frustrated because people would talk to the person that was with him and wouldn't talk directly to him. And I thought, like, oh my gosh, do I do that? And so I was more aware of that. And it was just probably something that, you know, you don't think about until somebody brings it up. And then you, oh, well, you know, that's something good to be aware of. And, you know, if I hadn't read that, I probably never would have been aware that that was something that I was doing.
And that's one of the things that I think literature really does in terms of giving us different perspectives. When I was in middle school, I read two books. One was about a character that had cystic fibrosis, and another one was a book called Death Be Not Proud. And both of those books had me thinking about how people with disabilities go about their daily lives and interact with the world, and also with illness too, because there's kind of a little bit of a back and forth in Clock Breakers in terms of thinking about disability and thinking of illness, because some forms of disability are, like, inherent, like you have them your whole life, and then some of them you encounter, like, over time, and those can lead to different storylines and different ideas and different ways of thinking about how you interact in the world. And so I think reading those books, though, as an eighth grader, like, blew my mind up and allowed me to see the possibilities for other characters and what other people were experiencing.
Along those same lines, what makes a book diverse?
That's a great question, too, because it's something that, you know, we can get really dorky and get really into it and talk a lot. And I think that there's a couple of different ways you can go about it, where you can think about, like, what are kids looking for, right? Like, they want to see themselves, and they want to see people that they know, and they also want to, like, learn a little bit more about the world. So when we have, like, a character like a Minotaur, it helps them see a little differently and think about, like, how would this work a little differently? Or when we have a character like Charlie, we get to see, like, how she interacts in the world. Or we can take a step further back from that and say, who's writing the book? So as a, like, I'm a middle-class white woman now. I used to teach at Western Oregon University, so I'm from a totally kind of mainstream perspective in terms of how I look at things, but I also grew up poor, so as you talk about economics in this book, there are elements of, like, kind of socioeconomic principles. But as a white woman, I also want to see, like, all those other characters and all those other authors being also their stories represented. So when we talk about, like, people's own stories, because they'll have a perspective that's entirely different from mine that I might not even have realized. Mm-hmm. So I always look for books that are written by both characters that have disabilities, but also people that are writing from their own experiences. So if that's, like, an African-American author, like, one of my favorite sci-fi authors right now is N.K. Jemisin. And she's just amazing the way she builds out the world. And she thinks differently than I do. Like, I tend to think with a background in almost European folklore and American folklore, and all of her worlds are built out of an African folklore perspective. So the entire book and the arcs of the book are changed completely. So those own stories, like, really, really matter.
So that being said, how do you make a book diverse and keep the story authentic?
This is something I struggle with so much in revision, I think, because when I wrote the book, when I write my first drafts, they go really fast. So I just write and I think about who the character is and just what she does. And I really get into that. But then in the revision, I kind of build out the world and I build out the scenes and I build out the characters. And so to keep them authentic, a huge part of that is how they interact with each other and, like, kind of what they would say to each other and how they would say things. But then also the things that they're doing. So one of the things that came up later in the book later in the revision, I had a sensitivity reader. So a sensitivity reader is somebody who reads your book looking for specific things like about disability or about sexuality or about just any issue that you want to point them to. So my sensitivity reader talked about like how people interact with Charlie's wheelchair. And I never really thought about that particularly. I thought about how they interacted with her, but not how they interact with like the wheelchair itself. So in the revision, I have her dad is constantly putting his arm on the arm of her wheelchair, and it's driving her crazy because that for her is like her space and it's her and it's herself. So if her dad is mad at her, if her dad is like being angry and he has his hand on her wheelchair, it's like if somebody was like holding your arm the entire time that they're like yelling at you or lecturing you. So there's these really important ideas about like how you stay authentic to a person with disability, their actual experience.
That's really interesting. I've never heard of a sensitivity reader, but it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, especially, you know, I have lots of beta readers who just read and enjoy the books and they point out things that they like and things that they don't like. But as we write books with characters with disabilities or if we write books with diverse experiences, people look at those books and when they read them, they tend to like think that those characters are going to represent every person with disabilities experience. Which they don't. Like, Charlie is still, like, she's a character. She is one person. She can't represent everyone. But you still want to think about how people who are reading it, how they're going to interact with that character and think about that character. Because while some people who have disabilities might, or who are in a wheelchair, might not be bothered by somebody having their arm on the wheelchair, like, other people, it would really be something that matters to them.
Well, earlier this year, beloved Portland native and children's book author Beverly Cleary celebrated her 100th birthday. And in her biography, My Own Two Feet, which is fascinating if you haven't read it, she explains that she decided to become an author because when she was a children's librarian, a few young patrons asked where the books were about kids like them, and she realized that there weren't really any. And so she published her first book for children, Henry Huggins, in 1950. So that was over 60 years ago. Why do you think there's a big push now for diversity in children's books?
I'm just taking a second to think about this. Because in my mind, the more books I read as I was growing up, the more I saw that there were a lot of characters and a lot of ideas that weren't talked about. And we assume that like we'd get like a little sprinkling of an idea or a little flash of a character, but we wouldn't get their full experience. And I don't know why it took so long. I think in terms of publishing, what I saw over the past 3 years, because I was really paying attention over the past 3 years, and that's when you saw the We Need Diverse Books movement really coming to the forefront. Mm-hmm. It's like you had these authors that wanted to write these stories and wanted to tell these stories. And you especially had like African-American authors who had been trying to get their books out and not getting the representation that they wanted and that they needed. And then suddenly you had people who started to take a stand and say, no, that's not right, and started to take a stand across all sectors of publishing. So I think we've had authors who have been writing these stories and thinking about these stories, but they haven't been getting out or they've been edited out, which happens more than I knew in terms of like just editing books and changing them before they reach the readers.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing to think about. I mean, just like you said, it seems like in the past few years it's really come forward as an issue and something that we're thinking about and kind of, you know, standing up and saying like, hey, we need this, but I don't know if there's any, you know, one reason, but just why is this happening now?
Yeah, I think it's that thing of having so many reasons and so many people all coming together and saying like, we need to have these characters and also these authors represented. And I love the books that have been coming out recently in terms of Wonder. Wonder was a big one. Was that 3 years ago? 4 years? Was that 2 years ago?
I think it was more than 2 years, maybe three.
So when that one came out by R.J. Palacio, it gave this perspective of a boy who had a facial deformity, and it showed like what he thought and how he interacted in the world, and you had all of his friends and things that his friends said, and then, yeah, as a reader, you get to see what he's experiencing and also how other people are interacting with him, which can really impact kids.
And it's an amazing book if you haven't read it. It's a children's book, but even adults, I think, would really get a lot out of it. For those of you just tuning in, we're speaking today with author Kate Ristaw about her new book, Clockbreakers, Asterion's Curse. Recently, we had a staff meeting and we did a book share. We were supposed to each come up with, you know, 2 to 5 titles of diverse books that we'd read to share with other staff members, which is great. But so at first I was like, oh no, have I read it? And then I start going through my list. Oh, okay, I'm good. So I come up with my books. And then as we're going around the table sharing our different books, some people brought up books that I hadn't thought of as like diverse books, quote unquote. So I started wondering after that if labeling something as a diverse book is doing a disservice in any way. How do we make it so the diverse thing, whatever it is, isn't the story?
Mm-hmm. And I think it was Jason Reynolds who was talking about this recently in terms of being invited to be on panels about diversity. And he's like, I would really just like to be invited on a panel where I just talk about books because he writes books really, really well. And in some ways, it does a disservice because, you know, he has a really great perspective on how to build characters, but he's stuck talking about diversity all the time. And that's not his entire story, and that's not all that he is. And I think that happens with diverse books, too. Like, in terms of if you get that label for a diverse book, sometimes you're even, like, pushed to a different part of the bookstore, or, you know, you're categorized a particular way. And so what's interesting in the middle grade land is parents will pick something up because they're like, yeah, my kids should read this, right? Mm-hmm. But if kids see particular labels on it, they're like, wait, what does that mean? Like, do I want to read this?
Mm-hmm. And
so I think diversity, like, and having that diverse books label can be good, but yeah, you're right, it can also be a huge disservice. There's a book called Pax that just came out, and it's about a boy's perspective and a fox's perspective, and it goes back and forth between the boy and the fox. And I don't think people would label that a diverse book or how it talks about disability, but it definitely is a book that handles disability very well as just part of their experience, and also talks about illness and how he interacts with his family and his friends. And so I think I just love the idea of just pushing books that are good, like, and books that represent a range of experiences.
It's definitely all about the sell. Mm-hmm. I mean, if kids will take your advice at all about what books to read, it really depends on how you talk about the book. And if you say things like award winner or diverse book, no thanks.
And a lot of times the language that we use can pull kids away. So if I say, like, Clockbreakers is a book about Charlie and her diverse experience as she encounters, like, they're not going to connect with that. Or if I say words like socioeconomic, like, why am I even doing it? Because it's pulling them away from, like, what the book is about. Right? And they want to know, like, it's an adventure story and there's friends and family and there's a little bit of fighting.
So I'm a children's librarian, and I, like many in my profession, am a white woman, and I don't think I'm alone in fumbling with this issue. On one hand, I'm like, obviously we need books with diverse characters, and I try to include those books in my story times, but sometimes I worry I'm going to do it wrong. Like, what does this white lady know about this? Why is she trying to read this? So did you ever have that feeling when you were writing this book?
Yeah, that's one of the huge worries, is that, like, how are you going to represent characters and how are you also going to represent experiences? And one of the things that helped me, I talked about, was, like, sensitivity readers and having people read for specific ideas and seeing, like, you know, how am I talking about these characters? Am I being fair? And what's funny is a lot of times I would push the other way, where characters like Trent or characters like his dad ended up being less authentic, and I had to do more in the revision with them because I was so focused on, like, how I represented Charlie and how I talked about Maria's family, and then Trent would kind of slip to the background, or the dad wouldn't be consistent throughout. So a lot of that revision is my main thing, and I think it's really, really helpful as you think about, like, how you want to accurately represent characters. The hardest thing I would say is stepping out of my writer's zone and talking about what I do, because I think I spent so much time kind of crafting this book and trying to make sure that it was put together in the best way possible with the characters that were the most real that I could get out there. But then to take a step back and say, okay, why did you do the things you do, is really hard. Because, yeah, we fumble a lot and we say things that, like, that aren't appropriate or don't matter, or we miss the big picture. But we're trying, and I think that's the biggest thing, is if you can have people who are allies and people who are out there and pushing for stories that are going to have different types of characters and different types of plots, like, in stories.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's an amazing thing.
Putting it out there, even if you don't get it exactly right, at least there's something. So I'm curious, you talked about, you know, having people read it before it was published. What kind of feedback have you gotten from readers since it's been published about the characters and the story and all that?
So since it's been published, what kind of feedback have we gotten? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so funny. Once a book is published, then you're like, you know, you're kind of done. And there's things that you want to change, but you can't. And the feedback that I've gotten, a lot of questions about Trent, actually. Like, what's the story? Like, I want to know more. And there's a lot of just little drops and little hints of things that could happen and really big questions. In Charlie's character, a lot of it is really straightforward because we start out the book with a lot of her narrative and like exposition over the top instead of like coming down into the dialogue and the characters. So we find out a lot about Charlie. We learn a lot about Charlie, but there's still a lot of questions at the end, which I think it makes sense in terms of a series. Like right. You want to keep reading more and you want to know what happens next. So yeah, so I would say a lot of it is questions around where are things going? Like, okay. So they can't be mad at me yet because they don't know where I've taken them.
You talked a little bit about this. Your book was published by Small Press. What was the process like of getting the book out there and getting it published?
So they were fantastic. It went really, really quickly, actually, in terms of I sent them. They also just recently republished my book, Shadow Girl. So we had both of those books going back and forth at the same time. So they were sending me edits and they were sending me proofs, and I was doing a lot of revision that way with them. And so probably the best experience I've ever had, just in terms of working with that publisher and how open like he was to changes, and also open in terms of what like my vision of the book was. I think we did a lot more work with Shadow Girl, which is a young adult novel. And this one, it was a lot more ready to go, I think.
So this book, Clockbreakers, is geared towards middle grades. Why did you write for that age group, and how is it different to write a book for elementary age kids as opposed to teens?
It's funny, I tend to choose characters and then think about what age group I'm writing later. So I think the character really chose the age group for this one. So Charlie is an 11-year-old girl, and she was 10 and she just turned 11, so it definitely felt like a younger story to me. When I write young adult books, I have kind of a young adult vision of what the book should be. So with middle grade, we tend to like kind of skirt the edges of a lot of bigger issues and bring in bigger themes, but not deal with them in such a dark way. And I think a lot of times in young adult fantasy, you can take turns for the dark and you can think about things that happen and terrible things that happen. And you can bring people around and have them consider them. All of my books, I've talked about this before, they have like this thread going through them of like hope and light and sometimes dragons. They all are kind of dealing with some of the same issues, but we're thinking about like how kids would actually be able to deal with those issues and think about those issues. Because this could be a very different book as a young adult book. And spoiler alert, there is a version of this book where it is a young adult book. And it was weird, and it didn't really work because it didn't deal with things the way that I kind of wanted to. That was part of my working with publishers, where they asked me to write it as a young adult book, and I wrote it, and it wasn't the book that I wanted to write.
Interesting. All right, so if you could go back in time and give your 11-year-old self one piece of advice, what would it be?
I would probably say the idea that it will get better. That's something I always share when I talk to middle school students and I talk to high school students, this idea that, you know, just write what you want, and your writing's going to get better, but also everything else is going to get better. There's times in your life where things are really, really hard, and you need to look for the people that are lights that shine brighter and pull yourself closer to those, and that would probably be my biggest piece of advice.
That's a good one. You have a website at Kate Ristaw, so KateRistaw.com. Are there other ways readers can discover more about you and your work?
I spend way too much time on Facebook. and if you also check out my website, I have events pages there where I constantly do events. And if anybody wants me to come talk at schools, I do that for free. I talk for free at schools and libraries. So I just got done with a series at the Tigard Library where we just talked about writing and NaNoWriMo and writing a book in a month. And we actually had a student who wrote a book in a month. And I just wanted to clap and scream and say, great. So my favorite thing is actually going and talking to classes and schools. And over the next week, actually, I'm going to be in Illinois doing a series of workshops in rural Illinois and rural Iowa that are dealing a lot with perspective and dealing with diversity and talking about like how we see the world and how we see each other. So exciting.
Asturian's Curse is the first in the Clockbreaker series. When can we expect the second book?
The second one is already written. It just needs revision. And I had waited to revise as I wanted the book to be out and made sure that they weren't going to make any more big changes to it. So now I am starting revision on that in January. Right now I'm writing something brand new and editing that, and it's great. It's fun as you are a writer and as you work on all these different projects to see how your writing develops and how your writing changes and how you deal with problems and how you kind of get better. And in a lot of ways, I think my dialogue and my action has been good and is getting better. But what's improving as I'm revising is the rest of the world. Like, how do I make people feel like they're really there and connect with my characters and with the setting itself? So more books are coming.
Well, I appreciate you talking to me. Before we wrap things up, is there anything else you'd like to tell the listeners about your book, Clockbreakers, Asturian's Curse?
I just think it's a fantastic book because I love the characters. I really do. And I love the story. And fun things are happening. And if you read through the book and you get to the very end, there's a twist at the very end, too, for the next book that sets it up and says, there's more things going on than we're realizing. So pick it up. Enjoy it.
Kate Ristaw, thank you so much for talking with me today on Between the Covers.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today on Between the Covers. I'm your host, Bethany Grabo.